Hi, this is Padma Lakshmi and
Mother Jaffrey.
You're listening to
Radio Cherry Bomb.
You're the bomb. Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. Get cracking at hansenbrookfarm.com. Before we get to today's guest, I want to remind you about our summer sustainability project. It's called Cone Only. If you go to an ice cream shop, stand, or truck this summer, skip the cup and skip the spoon. Get a cone so it's a zero-waste treat. If you're out there saying, ugh, Carrie, I'm a cup girl, I hear you. I used to be strictly cup, mostly because a lot of cones taste like cardboard. But there are so many good cones these days, like the baked chocolate ones at my fave, Rococo Ice Cream in Kennebunkport, Maine. Milkmaid, right here in Brooklyn, has awesome cones. You can find Taiyaki-inspired cones in New York City's Chinatown. You have so many options. Make sure to use the hashtag #ConeOnly so we can see what you and the Bomb Squad are up to ice cream-wise. Thanks to our cone-only partners, the New York City and Long Island chapters of Surf Rider. If the restaurant world was a baseball league and I had to pick the rookie of the year, my money would be on Kia Damone. This young chef is mindful, stylish, and hilarious, and she cooks like a dream at her restaurant Lolito in Chinatown in Manhattan. If any of you are old school New Yorkers, you'll know the location because it used to house Winnie's, the famous karaoke bar. I had lunch at Lolito recently and was so blown away by the food. I had the chickpea guac, the rainbow rice bowl, the crispy sweet potatoes, and more. If I lived closer, I would eat there every day. Kia's food is fresh and bright, just like she is. If you were at Jubilee, hopefully you got to meet Kia and try her food. She was one of the featured chefs during our breakfast. Before we get to Kia, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for the chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Janine Booth is a mother hen. She's the Australian chef behind the Southern-inspired Root and Bone restaurants in New York City and Miami. Want to learn how Chef Janine makes her sweet corn spoon bread? The ingredients include Hansenbrook Farm eggs, some scallions, sharp cheddar cheese, and a touch of heavy cream. You can find Chef Janine's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on hansenbrookfarm.com. Where can you find Hansenbrook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs? At Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Enjoy my chat with Kia Damone of Lolito. So, Kia, we're going to start at the very beginning.
Okay.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Orlando, Florida, the kingdom of hospitality, the Mickey Mouse.
Is it weird to grow up somewhere that is so specifically known for one thing?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people, when you say you're from there, oh, you went to Disney World all the time. Oh, you went this all the time. It's like, no. Actually, a lot of us stay away from those areas unless we work there, which that's what we do. Like your first job or like your first, what's the word? Initiation, I guess, when you get a certain age out there is you go work at the theme parks. Everyone knows like when that period is and you apply. But outside of that, like most of us stay away from there because it's a lot. It's too much.
All right. So we're going to go back to the Magic Kingdom in a few minutes. But what was food like in your house? Who cooked?
The earliest memories of cooking in my house was when we lived with my grandmother at some point. And she was always cooking grits. I know that's not what we always eat, but I always specifically remember grits like on the back. And then we like lived near some water as well, like little rinky-dink pond situation with like little raggedy fish. But my grandma was catching these raggedy fish and frying them. And there's always like some fried fish and some grits on like a piece of white bread with some mustard, maybe a sausage. That's what I kind of remember until it was like holiday time. And when it was holiday, it was pulling out the turkeys, pulling out the hams, all of that.
Did you cook?
Yes and no.
Like little kid cooking?
Oh, no. They would not allow me to do any of that, which is interesting. I know a lot of people have the opposite. Like, oh, when I was this many years old, like I was in there with an apron. No, they were like, we're handling it. Little kids, like, get out of here. So I was eating all the time. I was underneath my grandma when she would make pound cake, her pound cake, her red velvet cake, and her carrot cake. And I was always there for the bowl. Mm. And the bowl was always mine, like with me, like, no shade, like being the favorite and most beloved grandchild. I love drama. But me being...
The bowl was a big deal. I always, yeah, I got agitated the bowl. For the bowl and the beaters.
Yes, and the beaters. I wanted it all. My other cousins were like a bit too older and they were like, leave it alone, it's for Kia. But then my like little brother, younger brother came along and like younger cousins. And then there was competition for the bowl and the beater. And I was pressed. I was so, give the beater to your brother. There's two of them. I was so mad. But I was eating. I was just getting the scraps and just enjoying being around everyone. You know, I think it was maybe like years later once, you know, it was me and my mom and my brothers and my stepdad and all of that, where I kind of started having to cook because, you know, they go to work and you're stuck there for the summer, you know. And either we weren't always going to like aftercare, like summer situation, so it's like you have to do something. And I tried to mimic what I saw them doing a lot, which led to a lot of disasters, a lot of Kia that's not an actual piece of meat, that's like a piece of ham hock for beans, and that's not like seasoning, that's meat tenderizer that you just put on, like you can't eat this, you know. But I was just like, this is what I remember seeing, so this is, you know, what I'm gonna do. There was definitely a lot of trial and error, a lot of burnt rice, a lot of mistrust of my abilities in the kitchen, which is crazy because now I'm doing this, you know.
But you didn't burn the house down.
I didn't.
You didn't injure yourself too badly.
No, not too badly. I'm here able-bodied and blessed.
So did you work at the aforementioned theme parks?
Yes, I worked at Universal. Yeah.
What did you do?
I started as this like program that they call like food rescue, and that's just because it was like so many people coming in that they didn't really want to hire people like for specific places. They just hired a crew of us who would literally be at a new restaurant every day.
So curious that they called it food rescue
because they needed help, because it was a situation.
Today, like if you said somebody was part of like a food rescue crew, mm-hmm. I would think that you're going in and getting like excess food from events and different things to bring it to shelters and all that. Yeah.
That's because you're kind. That's because you have a good heart that you would think that. Absolutely not. We were sent just to help people with just the influx.
So you were like an A team.
Yeah. I'd be like, where are we going? Or was saying the thing? Where was I going? Was it going to Jurassic Park, or am I going to the Toonville Popeye thing? Or I actually bounced around a lot until I stuck at Harry Potter, which made sense because that was the biggest thing going on there. So
I thought you were going to say because you loved Harry Potter.
That too, but I didn't want to tell anyone that because I don't know. It was like a hit or miss. Like if you loved it so much, you would like get stuck at like certain places, like, you know, to interact with guests and stuff like that, like it being costumes. But then sometimes if you loved it like too much, they like would it? I don't know. It was weird. So I was like, I'm just going to omit that and see what happens. And I got put there and they were like, let's keep these people. Let's keep her and these other people. And that was so fun.
And what was the restaurant?
The Three Broomsticks. Shout out to y'all.
You looked at me like I should know that.
Duh. No, the three broomsticks. And they had shepherd's pie, fish and chips. There was ribs. There was soda bread, which I grew to really actually enjoy. There was half chickens on there. It was a situation.
Were they themed? Did they have funny, like, Harry Potter related names?
Nope. The food. Oh, okay. No, not in the three room. Like, the food was just very like this. And then
it's disappointing.
I know. It's okay. But first of all, the inside of it was phenomenal. The interactiveness, just the way it looked, honestly, it was really dope. And like, I would just hear the music on loop, so I couldn't watch the movies because all I can hear is just the soundtrack going and going and going. But eventually I moved out of Three Broomsticks and I was at a Butterbeer Cart. So I was a Butterbeer girl for my last days.
Butterbeer.
Something like a cream soda, but not quite.
Oh, okay.
And then it has frozen or soda. Apparently there have been major developments in Butterbeer technology since I left, which was like, it has been over 5 years since I've been there. But it's really developed and grown. And I think about it sometimes. I find old pictures, like, it was very great times, but also very bad times. Just because, you know, first job and working with different personalities and people. And, you know, you may or may not get fired. I was fired, but it's fine. But it's fine.
Did you gravitate toward a food job there, or they just assigned you to that?
I definitely gravitated towards
food. Oh, you did? So that was what you wanted?
All I wanted to do was food.
When did that kind of first manifest itself?
The love for being near food.
Because you weren't really cooking at home until you had to fend for yourself.
Yeah. Honestly, it was probably around that time because I got a job there. And then I also got a job like hosting at a restaurant. And it just felt like the natural occurrence of things. You know what I mean? At first. But since I was already like coming from such a food centered home and all of that, it was like, well, yeah, let's get a food service job because like they're always going to hire like whatever, you know, that's what it seemed like it was at first. Until the more I got involved and then working at a place I was hosting at and just being in the kitchen and then eventually cooking, you know, more for myself because of like dietary things. I think it was definitely around that time that I was like, oh, wait a second. I actually like this. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to do this. But at first it's like, oh, I like this and I can do this. And it gives me a sense of independence. You know what I mean? Yeah, definitely around. That's when the spark, the Harry Potter spark went off inside of me. I don't know.
Before we talk too much about New York, tell me about your Tallahassee supper club.
Yeah. So I started a supper club with my good friend Adriana. Shout out to Adriana. She is going to gag. But I started this supper club with her called the Supper Club from Nowhere. And I knew I wanted to do some sort of dinner series pop-up situation, which made the most sense because I didn't have a particular space I was working out of, you know. I was listening to Gravy. I love listening to Gravy. And I started talking about Georgia Gilmore. And I'd heard about her, but like not in like great, great depth. And I listened to this episode and I did my research about her club from Nowhere and everything. And I was like, yeah. I was like, I co-sign. I stand. I was like, this is definitely like everything that I'm feeling like I want to do with food, you know? So I started the Supper Club from Nowhere and it was really scary to do that. It was really scary to put myself out there. Cause you know, people always say, it's like when you know, you're in school and you have all these friends or whatever in community and then you're like, well, I really want to throw a party. I don't know if these people are actually going to come to my party and I have to put the party out there. And if I put it out there, I also have to be prepared for people to not care to support it. You know, so I was like, I am going to do this thing, but I'm going to really feel strongly and secure within myself about it so that I don't feel disappointed when people don't show up and I don't take it personally, you know. So I went for it, started the Supper Club from Nowhere. Literally around the same time, I went ahead and launched myself as Kia Cooks. I went through multiple names that I am embarrassed of until I made it to Kia Cooks. And I launched it all at the same time with the help of my friends. It is my greatest joy. Yeah, it has brought me so much joy, so much confidence in myself, so much just direction, you know, with food. Because it's like I'm cooking food and I started, you know, cooking food and I started being on Instagram. But I felt like I was just literally falling in line with what typical Instagram food bloggers say and the typical food blogger hashtags. And it just felt so inauthentic, you know. And I was like, what am I talking about? Why am I saying hashtag yummers, hashtag food porn? Why did I make this French toast ice cream? I was like, what the hell? I was like, what? What am I doing? So it felt so good to finally bring that out of me. And I did dinners, pop-ups. Some, I'd, for the first one, I did them out of my home that I was staying in with my roommates for like $10. Like red beans and rice, vegan cornbread, like I think greens, like a really, that's the way I like to cook anyway. So just really Southern food, you know, and people loved it. So I did more and did a breakfast version, did one that was an homage to Solange and the seated table, and tried to do one for Valentine's Day, just, you know, and people enjoyed it. I think the last one I did was on my friend's farm, Katie and Aaron, their Full Earth farm. And that was the biggest one there and the most expensive one, like as far as like tickets people bought at that price range. And I got the duck from White Oak Pastures out in Georgia. And just it was such like an elaborate labor of love from everyone that I could not have imagined that I would have done that when I was literally in my room, like with my little 200 whatever rent, you know, whatever, just dreaming, you know what I mean? Literally like not even breaking even because I'm pulling all that money out of my pocket, you know what I mean? Just to do it. And then having dishes everywhere for 3 days, like I could not have imagined reaching that, you know what I mean? From that. And I definitely did not imagine reaching this from that, all in the span of like a year. It's pretty wild.
But you decide you're going to New York.
Yeah.
And you connect with Gerardo Gonzalez,
uh-huh.
Who at the time, was he at Lolito?
No, yeah. He was at Lolito.
He was, okay. Mm-hmm. He's one of only two men who I've ever seen carrying a Cherry Bomb tote bag. So I have a lot of affection for him. Aww. Just in general, but that made me love him even more.
Yeah.
So you come up there. Do you start working for him immediately?
No. So I went up there with a friend. When I was in Tallahassee, another thing that happened was that he wanted one of my shirts, my Kia Cook shirts, because I wanted a Lolito shirt, you know, and I was like, oh, this shirt's so cool. I definitely want to support it. So we exchanged shirts. He didn't send me my shirt. Yeah, I know. He didn't send me my shirt. I sent his, and then my Instagram was blown up, and I saw that he had wore it for Grub Street. And I was like, what? So I just went, I was up there anyway. So I went to visit, got to know all these people, et cetera, et cetera. I went back home. And before I went to go do some work in Detroit with some other folks for the Allied Media Conference, my friend saw a post that they were looking for a sous chef. And she sent me that post. And I was like, okay. I really looked at it and I was like, all right. Like, I wish the listeners could see me shrug my shoulder. I'm like, I don't care. And she was like, you should totally apply. I was like, I should totally not. And she's like, well, why not? And I was also reading Shonda Rhimes' Year of Yes around the same time. And I was saying yes to everything until that. And I was like, no, like, why would I do that? She's like, well, why not? She was like, you have everything that's cool. I was like, I don't feel like I do, you know, like I have a lot of confidence being self-taught, but I didn't realize that I had internalized some ideas about my capabilities because of that and wasn't even going to give myself the chance even try. And if it didn't work, at least I'm there, you know. Like, I was looking back, I'm kind of shocked that I did that, because I'm the first one to like jump into something, make a rash decision, like buy shoes when I have like $200 in my account. Like, I am wild in that manner. But she was like, well, if you don't send it, then I'll send your resume. Yeah, because she had edited my resume. She was like, well, if you don't do it, I will. And I was like, wow, okay. So it got sent. And they had reached out to me. It wasn't G at the time. Someone had reached out to me and we kind of tried to link it up. And after I did the work in Detroit with all these amazing people, and that's why I finally really, really met Carla, who's the GM. And we all spent a lot of really great, beautiful time together. That was also a really rough time in my life that was all happening, you know. And they were like, Kia, just come out. Like, just do it. And I did it. And I did it, and I went to work under someone else at the time, but I was just happy to be in the space to even physically be there. It was just really mind-blowing to me. I touched down the 12th and I started working of August, and I started working the 14th of August. I have not stopped working.
It's a big move. I mean, New York is not the easiest place to just roll into.
It's so hard.
It's so hard. So G had left when you were working. He was gone already.
Yeah.
Okay. And he moved down to the Caribbean to do a
project. Yeah, he's in the Caymans right now.
We're all waiting for our invitation down to the Caymans.
They're doing, he's doing his thing out there.
Okay. So for those who haven't gone to Lalito, explain what the restaurant is and what the cuisine is.
So Lalito is founded as a Cali Mexican restaurant, which made sense, you know, with G being Cali Mexican. But now that I'm there.
But you have to add that it is plopped in the middle of Chinatown.
It is.
And what people need to know about New York Chinatown is other restaurants really don't open in Chinatown.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very much, I mean, that's their community and their space and all of that, you know. That's why I think about the fact that we're in Chinatown and how we're taking up space in that community. And that if we're going to be there, then I want things on the menu to reflect that. I want us to be buying things. Like, there's like a few places, like we get all our fish from around the corner. There's, you know, Baird Meats that we go to, you know, get specialty things or last minute things.
So many markets around
there. Yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. if we're going to be here, then we need to respect that and we need to put the money, you know, out back into their community. Yeah, for sure. I don't play that. But yeah, no, we're right in the middle of Chinatown. So I definitely want to like continuously reiterate.
Yeah. But that is a neighborhood in transition. I was around there a few weeks ago. I couldn't believe all the for rent signs and all the businesses.
Lots of for rent signs.
Like so many of my favorite places.
The oldest Haagen-Dazs is gone. That was really sad. Right,
that was one of that had been there forever.
It was forever. And everyone loved the Haagen-Dazs and now she's gone. It definitely is. And I mean, I know that speaks a lot to just gentrification and people getting hip to like what neighborhood they can latch onto now. I've been learning a lot so far from just being in the neighborhood and then just Popeye, who works at the restaurant, who's been there for a long time. He's always putting me on to specific cuisines and things like that. And I'm like, yes, teach me. Like, I don't want to be walking around here ignorant. You know, like I refuse.
good.
I refuse.
And you know, the location was a famous
Winnie's
karaoke bar.
Mm-hmm. Winnie's. A lot of people are upset. a lot of people come in and they're like, what is this? Where's Winnie's? I'm like, babe, Winnie hasn't been here. She hasn't been here for 2 years. And I don't know how many years before that Winnie was. Well, that, and I'm like, I don't want no smoke. I just got here. I'm like, I don't know.
Winnie's was an institution. But Lalito has the potential to be a new institution because the food is fabulous.
Thank you so much.
Tell us about the menu.
Yeah. So honestly, it's really difficult to describe the food that he was making. I'm going to be honest.
Did you change the menu?
It's so difficult. I want to say 35%.
Okay.
35% right now. Should be 50, should be 65, but you know what? I'm not going to beat myself up about it. It's 35. I'm working on it every day. Very hard to describe the food that he was making. There's like the pastelone that everyone loves. That's like a veggie version of the pastelone with sweet plantains on there. There's the vegan chicharrones that everyone is like screaming about, shishitos, things like that.
How do you make a vegan chicharron?
Well, it's this little like pasta sheet. It's a pasta sheet that you can get from a Mexican specialty store. And you just fry it and it just poofs. It really is pretty. Like, I'm not gonna, when I first saw one, I was like, this is the coolest. I can't eat them. It's just too much for my stomach to handle. And then making them all the time, watching, you know, fried pasta. I'm just like, I don't want to see it no more. But yeah, no, really cute. Right now, I have the duck on there that everyone loves, that I love. That one took a few months for it to look as simple as it does. It took months for me to figure out how I want to do it. Because I was like, oh, well, I want to do duck confit. And I want to do this. And I want to do that. And it's like, okay, Kay, let's think about logistics and pick up time. And you can make a duck breast in an instant, but duck confit, you're looking at like 3 days of prep and then 6 hours, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, whatever. The duck breast and tiger salad is my favorite right now.
Tell me what's in the duck.
So it's a duck breast with this maple marinade on top, and then there's the tiger salad. The tiger salad has pickled carrots. There's scallion, there's red onion, cucumber, celery. It used to have pickled lotus root, which was really pretty, but a lot of people just weren't enjoying that pickled starch situation, which I could respect, you know? I was like, it's pretty, but you know, if the people don't like it, I don't want to waste my time making it, nor do I want to see it come back on the plate. That is insulting. But yeah. Pickle carrots, etc., cucumbers. The tiger salad dressing that I make in house. That's like orange based with all kinds of other cute secret things in there. And I think I've got it to a science now, where you have this really bright, vibrant, like crunchy salad, and then you have this like really like rich duck breast. People have been ordering a lot lately, so I think
you're onto something.
I think I found a formula.
What else is super popular on the menu?
What else is super popular? Definitely the red curry snapper. I enjoy it. I think it's the prettiest thing, and it's so basic, at least to me. But I feel like it lets just steaming the Florida snapper. Shout out to Florida with the banana leaf and a lot of aromatics. Like it's, I feel like it allows the fish to shine the way that it should, and just simple food that people enjoy. I think that's what I'm trying to get to, and not trying to crowd it too much with complexity or with doing the most, you know what I mean? I feel like I'm starting to filter out. Once I started filtering out all like the voices and things in my life, I realized that I can start filtering through my food.
Now, you're a big thinker.
Yes.
And you're really thinking beyond the plate.
Sagittarius, yes.
Are you a Sagittarius?
Double yeah. Sag, I just found out.
And when we were going through everyone's bios for Jubilee, and I know I mentioned Jubilee earlier, Kia was at her first Jubilee.
Yeah,
and
worked first with one.
The team at Smith Canteen and hung out with us for the day.
Yes.
It was great seeing you there. We loved your bio. We were like, Kia has the best bio, and you talked about wanting to uplift the marginalized voices in all areas of the food industry.
Yes, I, first of all, will not take credit for writing that, as I was so stuck, because it's very difficult to figure out what to say about myself, but someone close to me wrote it. Yeah, no, they wrote that, and I was really like, oh, wow, thank you. But it was true. Absolutely. It was interesting to see that. And I was like, oh, no, that's everything that anyone really needs to know about me. You know, rare sneakers and all. But yeah, I want to lift these marginalized voices.
When did that become something that you were aware of as being a goal?
When I started the Supper Club, for sure. When I started the Supper Club and really started to delve into, because I always knew growing up, Black, you just know that things are different or that things were set up, and you never really quite have words for it until you like a hit a certain point in your life and you're like, oh, that's what this is and that's what this is. And then when you have the language for it, it's so exhausting because you just see it, you know what I mean? Before, mm-hmm. I was like, what is this like ominous like thing? I feel like, I don't know, something's kind of holding me back here. And then you find out what's holding you back and everyone else back and all these things, and it just, you're just filled with so much rage. But once I really started getting heavier into food and seeing that I really didn't have a whole lot of people to look to figure it out, is when I was like, okay, well, what the hell? What the hell is this about? Like, I feel like I can't connect to any of this because none of this is me or my story. And then I felt even stronger about that with the Supper Club when I was like, wow, all of these wonderful, wonderful women, wonderful Black women have like been contributing to food from the beginning, you know? And then even, I know a lot of people talk about like, well, you know, after slavery or during slavery, but it's like pre-slavery from like way over yonder, you know what I mean? Like it's been happening since then. I feel like it doesn't have to start when we talk about slavery, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, no, but even before that, like, what were we doing with food? But yeah, once I started to get the language for that and understand that and see that, I was like, I need to put on for the rest of my community, you know, because it's like, I am a woman and I'm a Black woman and I'm very openly queer as well, you know? And it was like, oh my God, like all of these intersections of exhaustion and then all of these paths of discrimination, it's like, Jesus Christ. So I was like, well, I am going to do everything in my power and in my career and in my existence to fight against that And I spent a lot of years fighting against that, a lot of years crying, a lot of years being so frustrated and feeling like I just really could not do anything because of the powers that be, you know, and the ways that people just do stuff, you know, person to person, just everyday interactions, everyday people who had access to things that I didn't, you know what I mean? So I was fighting a lot. And now that I'm here where I am, now I have power, which is kind of odd, or not odd, but just like surprising. It's like, now I have power, and now I have access, and now I have very intense visibility. So it's like, what can I do with all of that? And it's like, well, now I'm on the other side in some way that I can open up behind me or purposefully seek out folks like me and put them where I am and book people for things or send resources their ways and things like that. Or even just with press and interviews and all that, like continuously being open about it, mm-hmm. and pushing back against it. Cause it's like, there isn't always some like grand, huge gesture you can do or like some mass amount of money. Cause I don't have money or energy like that, but I do have my voice and I can talk really loud and for a long time.
And you have a platform now, like you're getting a lot of attention. Yeah. You're doing a lot of things. The media loves you.
Yeah, that's crazy. It makes me so shy. I'm like, do y'all like what? Like, I literally wake up with like crest of my eyes and like lock jaw, and I'm like, argh. And then I go out into the world. And everyone's like, Kia, we love you. I'm like, me. But yeah, it's like, now that I have it, I'm like done being scared of it or nervous by it. And now I'm like, I'm just going to be my absolute authentic self so that people can see me, so the right people. It's like, I know a lot of people can see me right now, but it's like, so the right people mm-hmm. can see me. Yeah. You know,
it's also an interesting time in New York. I think had you gotten here a few years earlier, you might've been very frustrated by what you found. There were not a lot of women of color getting attention for cooking.
Yeah.
There was not a queer community mm-hmm. that was as solid as I think it is now, mm-hmm. you know, thanks to things like Queer Soup Night and
shout out to them. Yep. Queer Soup Night, people like Aura and Kim and
also Jean, Angela DeMayuga. I don't think you can underestimate.
Oh yeah, I love her.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if she gets enough credit for the seeds she planted.
I don't think so either.
For helping the queer community in New York in food. Because I don't think it was really, I'm sure it was a conversation.
Yeah.
It just wasn't as open a conversation. And I think she used her Mission Chinese platform really
Absolutely.
Well. It wasn't always that way. And I think about it a lot and why.
Yeah.
Because, you know, starting Cherry Bomb, there are still a lot of female chefs who don't want to talk about being a female chef.
Yeah.
And they don't want to talk about being a female chef. They don't want to talk about being a black chef. They don't want to talk about being a queer chef. That's not even a word they're comfortable using.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's because people weren't talking, because women weren't in touch with each other to know that they had this, mm-hmm. you know, community, and they just wanted to be respected as chefs. And I do think all chefs first and foremost want to just be respected as chefs.
No, I absolutely respect. There are some people who's like, listen, it's not about this. It's not about this. It's not about this. It's about my food. And I totally rock with that. I'm like, because I have my times where I'm just like, all right, we can talk about all these things, but can y'all not forget that I also cook? You know, can y'all not forget that I also am busting my butt, like, to make sure, like, that this food is on point. But I am also feel privileged in that I can take up space with these other things and be like, all right, so we all understand that I can cook, right? And you can cook, and we can cook. Now let's talk about these other things that are going on that are stopping me and people like me from getting proper recognition or support or funding. You know, let's talk about the ways that these identities that we hold are leaving us vulnerable to abuse and really jacked up things in the kitchen and in the world, having us tokenized when we go do things. It's like, I want to talk about it. And then I also have times where I'm like, I don't want to talk about it.
I just want to talk about how to sear a duck breast.
Yeah. Like, do y'all want to know? I was on a panel for my good friend Devon with Yardie. He's one of Eater's Young Guns, like phenomenal. Love Devon Tanisha. But on the panel, it was like, sometimes I just want to talk about my food.
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate everything you do, and speaking up and the beautiful food you make. I mean, I had the best time that afternoon at Lolito,
and
I brought all the food back, and Jess, our associate producer,
hi Jess,
lost it over the food.
Yeah,
we all did. I was like, don't you wish this was next door and we could eat here every day?
Oh my gosh.
The tacos, the rice dishes, the salads. I mean, everything was beautiful.
I'm hoping to do more.
Are you doing breakfast and no, you're doing lunch and dinner right now?
Yep, lunch and dinner, and then Saturday and Sunday I run the brunch show.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah, it's just me.
No, oh poor baby.
It's okay. And honestly, I've gotten used to like working solo. I'm just like, yeah, get out of my way.
Quickly, yes. Supper Club. Is it still alive?
She's alive. I have been secretly plotting on how to bring that back full force without compromising the integrity of it or just doing anything with it that I don't want to do.
Right.
You know? So she's there. Kia Cooks. I'm dusting her off with some people, looking for a rebrand, a revamp, all of that. Just it's time to change things up and shake it, because I'm doing all kind of stuff now. You know what I mean?
But cool. We'll keep us in the loop.
Absolutely.
I could ask you 8 million more questions, but we're going to do the speed round.
What?
Ready?
No. What are the rules?
There are none. Just be speedy.
What? Oh, God.
Okay. Favorite kitchen tool?
Paring knife.
Song that makes you smile?
Box of Wheaties by Chris Quell. Yes.
Favorite ingredient to cook with?
Coconut milk.
Oh, why?
She's so good. Also, being a non-dairy hunty, like, it just gives me that richness that I need without, like, you know, the diarrhea.
I love that everything's a she.
Yeah.
Your supper club, coconut milk.
Occasionally a non-binary hunty, but.
Okay. What's a cookbook you love?
Princess Pamela's Cookbook by Princess Pamela.
Give us a little blurb about it.
So Princess Pamela, she just made this cookbook with these guys and then she disappeared. And I purchased the cookbook once they put it out there again. And it's literally, I was just crying reading the recipes because they're just so everything that I've grown up on, like very like old school, like things that my grandma, who was like born in like the 40s, you know, was making and that she learned to make from like her mother. You know what I mean? Like it's very, in every aspect of the word, it is very, very black and very, very amazing. And it's one of my greatest treasures that I have.
What is the oldest thing in your fridge?
Oldest thing in my fridge, I think, is this little weird bottle of sardines.
Dream vacation travel destination?
Tokyo.
If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
Ina Garten, I'm pretty sure she'll find a way to make a rotisserie chicken. Like she'll turn us being stranded into a dinner party.
Perfect. Well, Kia, thank you for stopping by. I know how busy you are.
I'm literally going back to work.
Oh, we've loved getting to know you. You're the bomb.
Thank
Bye.
You.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Kia Damone of Lolito for joining us. If you are in NYC this summer, be sure to plan a visit for lunch, dinner, cocktails, brunch, or heck, all of the above. Thank you to our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. You folks are excellent. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Media. Our show is edited, engineered, and produced by Jess Zeidmond, and our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. If you're a longtime listener and you've never left a rating or review for our show, well, today is the day. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, my name is Natalie Popcave, and I own Bee and the Baker in Seattle. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Jasmine Bell of Bell's Pastries here in Seattle. Jasmine creates custom cakes, gorgeous sugar cookies, and impeccable macaroons. She even teaches first-time bakers to flawlessly recreate these intricate confections. Jasmine shows me what drive and dedication looks like.